The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
I think it has to be without camera from my end, unfortunately. But and I didn't put any makeup on, so
it would be a disappointment anyway.
It would be a little scary if you did have the makeup on.
Yeah, like asleep with it, yeah.
All right, so I guess if you're ready, we can get rolling.
Yeah.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight, we get all ooky spooky with Bjorn Alexander Brehm, the Goth Minister, on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Focuses on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, driving, independent, and underground film from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. Making their name in Teutonic music circles for both their unusually melodic gothic industrial meets traditional metal sound and a truly old-school horror-oriented stage show, the band is led down winding paths of inner darkness by mastermind Bjorn A. Brehm, who finds himself sucked from his ordinary daily life to become possessed by the twisted subconscious persona of the Goth Minister by night. Joining us as we hail horror hail with the Goth Minister himself, Bjorn Alexander Brehm, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to get you in the right mindset, here's Goth Minister with a prime slice of paranoia, because in the dark of night, when you're all alone, sometimes you have to wonder whether someone is after me. tonight on Third Eye Cinema, where every day is Halloween, we're going to put on our best October shroud, head on down to the local cemetery, light a few black and red candles, and have a spooky little graveside chat with performance art-driven crossover act Goth Minister, making their name in Teutonic music circles for both their unusually melodic gothic industrial meets traditional metal sound and a truly old-school Alice Cooper-style horror-oriented stage show. The band is led down winding paths of inner darkness by its musical mastermind, Bjorn A. Brehm, who finds himself sucked from his ordinary daily life to become possessed by the twisted subconscious persona of the Goth Minister by night. With their newest release, Utopia, coming out on AFM Records, complete with an unusually cinematic concert DVD, please welcome the eerie personage of the Goth Minister himself, Mr. Bjorn Alexander Brehm. Bjorn, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
First things first, how did you come up with the concept of the Goth Minister? Or did you really have no choice in the matter?
Well, it was kind of a coincidence. I started playing in a band in 1987, I think. And I played in a lot of thrash metal bands back then. I played like bass guitar, and then I played drums for another 10 years. And our band back then called Disco Judas. Of course, we had some funny incidents when people came to our shows and thought it was disco music and they got something completely else. But we played the industrial metal, like inspired by bands like Neurosis and stuff like that. And we split up and I started this new project. Actually, a friend of mine, he took me to this goth club, and I thought the guys and everyone there were so really tame. So we got a bit drunk and I told him, this scene, man, they should have a leader just for fun. And I said, what about Goth Minister, like a 30-meter tall guy? And he loved it. And then that was just a joke. But later, this is how the project started. And I started with my computers because I didn't have a band back then. So we started out a bit electronic, and then later I formed a band with metal musicians, and here we are now, like a real band.
I gotta admit, I really only discovered you with the current album, but I understand you guys have been together for at least a decade, and you've released four albums prior to Utopia. I also don't believe during that time that you cycled through many band members, just a few keyboardists.
Yeah, you know, our previous band, we had equally all the band members could decide whatever, and this was also the problem because we started fighting about the musical direction, etc. So when I found out Goth Minister, I thought that, okay, I think I want my own band. I can have musicians, they can have their saying, but if I don't like it, I just say no. But mostly, of course, if they have a good idea and I said no, I come crawling back later and I said, okay, you were right. But still you have the benefit of being able to say no. And actually, some of the first songs for Goth Minister, they were the songs that were ditched from the previous band. And Goth Minister did much better than Disco Judas, because Disco Judas, we just played like 200 shows in Norway. Right. Goth Minister has been performing in 40 different countries already. So,
but the fact that you haven't really gone through too many band members the whole time you've been doing Goth Minister, is that saying that the autocratic method is better than the democratic method for a band?
I don't know. I mean, I started out alone. The first shows in 2000, I think, was the first live performance, because the band started, like, the project started in 1999. And the first shows, I was just alone with some playback music and a big video screen with some really creepy video. And just makeup and just screaming in the microphone. That was how it started. Then I got the keyboard player. Then I got the guitar player from my old trash band. And then we got a drummer, live drummer. And then we got another guitar player. And then we kicked out the keyboard player. So this is basically how it was. Also, my then girlfriend, Sandra, she was also on stage with some costume changes. And we always focused on the show as well as the music. But it was a bit too much, so seems to us that she also wants to be like in the front, so it didn't work out in the end, so right. She also was kicked out. So, but I mean, now we're just having a lot of fun and focusing on this new big show.
Right. You all adopt some amusing stage names, which I always get a kick out of, but unlike the usual black metal crowd where they're ostensibly taking this very seriously, you guys seem to have an appropriate sense of humor about it. I mean, drummer Christian Svensson actually goes by Chris Dead, which just makes me laugh every time I see it.
Yeah, he also plays in a black metal band, and then he goes by the name Anti-Christian, so.
And I think it's guitarist Glenn Nilsson who also goes by Turbo Nata, which only half works since you have to read it backwards to get it, but then it becomes Satanabrute, which sounds like a cologne.
That's actually Ketil who has this name, because he got that name from his previous band called Red Harvest, which is an industrial metal band, and he just kept that name. I think Glenn is the most unfortunate. He just was forced to take the name of Icarus because he couldn't find any cool name, so... which game. This is was not so serious at all, but I mean, our music is serious, and the show has some sense of humor, although we work really hard to make it professional. And well, today we have like a crew of 8 people on every show. We have sound, lights, and we have 2 pyrotechnicians and 3 actors who also are like work professional with the animatronic props and everything. So it has become quite big, but we also have a lot of sense of humor, of course. Before, I think we were taking people just didn't get this sense of humor, right. Although we were laughing behind the scene. So I think it's good now that we can show off a bit more of this, because
exactly.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun too.
And that's what I picked up, you know, because usually you see them when they're doing this stuff, they're like totally dead serious and pole face, and you're like, yeah, okay, sure. But I'm watching you, and I'm like, you know, these guys, okay, this is a good sense of humor. I understand where he's coming from. You know, it's like an Alice Cooper kind of a thing.
Well, you can see in our Utopia film, which also has some 1-hour concert, but there's also an intro film and an outro
right.
film. So during the intro film, the first zombie I get attacked by is a baker zombie, a baker, basically, with a cake with maggots. And then I can't defend myself, so of course he has to get this cake in his face. So this is kind of... and then I get attacked by a seriously creepy, evil zombie, and then it gets more serious with some military guys and stuff. But I won't reveal too much, but yes, we have some sense of humor. I think it's important, because this is how we have fun with it, and why shouldn't also people share the same fun?
Exactly. Now, prior to the current record with AFM, you've actually been on Drawcart, which was also the home of one of my favorite, sadly defunct punk bands, the Killer Barbies. Like yourselves, they hailed from another country, in this case Spain, but achieved much of their success in their adoptive homeland of Germany. And you guys are a Norwegian band, also primarily coming to popularity in Germany, I understand. So what is it about Germany and in the past Drawcart that allows non-domestic acts to flourish? Because I believe that even Liv Kristine's old act, Theater of Tragedy, was bigger in Germany than Norway.
Yeah, definitely. We know them from Theater of Tragedy, and we've also been on tour with Theater of Tragedy. And actually, I think Gottminister is one of the bands who are more known in Norway too. But a lot of big Norwegian bands are not so known in Norway. Take Dimmu Borgir, for example. Of course, they're known in the scene, but you never read about them in the media or anything, and they barely play shows in Norway at all, which is peculiar because they are one of the biggest exports from Norway. So,
right.
But I think, I don't know, I think, unfortunately, the Norwegian scene has turned into some kind of indie rock scene. It's very strange. In Germany, it's more open-minded, actually. You have a lot of variety. You have this medieval scene. You have the goth rock, goth metal scene. You have the metal scene and the industrial. And you have many more possibilities and many more people to play in front of, too. And it's easier to tour in Germany. That's important, because they don't have all these mountains and, you know, if you want to play one show in Oslo, then the next show is in Bergen, then you have to force like 500 kilometers of mountains.
Wow. It actually reminds me, in a way, of the role that France used to play in the arts, at least up through the early 70s, where many famed artists, painters, writers, musicians all came to prominence under the aegis of Parisian-based movements and a claim that actually originated from all over the world, but toiled with lesser recognition on domestic shores. So is it like Jesus said that a prophet is not without honor and in his own country?
Yeah, maybe, I guess. So what I said about Norway is so funny, because I also work as a lawyer in the entertainment industry. I work in the film and movie industry, and also with a lot of musicians, and this is my daily job, and I deal a lot with the UK, and I asked the UK agents if they were interested in some Norwegian band sounding like a UK band, and they said, hell no, we have a lot of crap bands for that from before, so we want Norwegian bands that sound Norwegian.
Right.
We want like pompous, we want metal, we want this. We don't want indie rock UK sound band from
exactly.
Norway, and it's ridiculous. So most of them, so if you sound like a UK band, you do well in Norway, but not in the UK. And if you sound like a Norwegian metal band, you can do well in Germany, but not in Norway. So it's very, but this is, you know, this is the record labels and the festivals, they kind of run this show. Although, never mind what people want to hear, they're just forced to listen to what some, maybe 30 people want to
exactly.
promote.
It's all determined by the corporate heads or the A&R reps. Your first album back in 2003, Gothic Electronic Anthems, features some amusingly monikered recording and production staff with guys like Super Dead, Goat Father, and Sure Sick Milietis on the record. So how do you attract these guys, or they just decide to take on the silly Halloween names for this project?
Yeah, of course. It's, they have to have some names, of course. So back then we were working with a guy called himself Rico. It's Fredrik Darum. He's a really great Norwegian producer. He's totally on the same mindset as myself. Like, if I wanted something and he would do a mix, he would impress me. So I was hoping for the mix to sound like this, and then it sounds like, wow. So we were totally connected, but we had some work routine problems. There was a lot of strange things happening, and we spent a lot of time on kind of bullshit things and practical problems. So, but we're still friends today, and he's a great producer. His friend, the drummer, he's currently also drumming with more electronic band called Apoptygma Berserk.
Right.
A Norwegian band. He's back with them now, but he also mostly is doing like rock metal stuff with this band called Schaefer, and those guys are great actually to work with. But the last person you mentioned was Peder, right. Goat's father, Kjeldby. Very reluctantly he got that name. He's a cool guy. They have a big studio in Sweden, actually, Norwegians. And this is a big property he inherited from his father. And recently he has been complaining to Nokia, because now you can much more easily have the network for mobile phones. Because before it was so isolated, so you couldn't talk on the mobile phone. And this was much better for the band's concentration and focus in the studio. But now recently he told me that he's complaining because now you can actually talk in the mobile phone in the woods, and it takes off the focus of the. So he's also a funny guy, but he's very clever. Now he works more with the, like, film soundtracks and stuff. But I learned a lot from him. Great guys.
You also have a great credit that the listed producer is Evil Gothic Perfectionist co-production team of Harvest, Driving All Producers Insane, Bjorn Alexander Bremen, Machine. So who or what was Machine, and did you really drive the rest of the staff crazy with the mix on this project?
Well, Machine is the old guitar player. I played with that guy since 1989. He quit the band in 2008 to pursue his career with his, how do you say it? He's creating software for the army and for mobile phones. And so he pursued a job career, because you don't get extremely wealthy from playing in the band anyway.
Trust me, now.
Especially when you spend all your money on huge demons and props and stuff like that. So, but he also chose his name, Machine. I mean, he's a mathematic genius, so probably that's why. Otherwise, in the start, we had a lot of crazy incidents, and it was not like some kind of a PR stunt, actually. The first thing that happened was that when I told him when I was alone, I had this light technician who also was helping me with making this video, when I was just alone with the microphone stand and this video behind me, and he leased the car once. He parked the car, went into a shop, and he heard an explosion. And he told me that the car actually exploded and the doors were melted, so he couldn't open the doors. And I asked him what caused this explosion. No, there was some electric overload from the CD player. And just for fun, I asked what was in the CD player. It was the Gothmister demo. And this is really true. It's not a joke. And Rico, he had some, I'm not quite sure if it's true, because he had a lot of crazy stuff going on, but he claimed that a lot of equipment was ruined by some lightning and when he was producing our album. And just to jump to the recent years, when we started working with Neil Kernan on our previous album, the same week as he accepted to work on the Gothmister album, he got really, really ill. So he thought he was gonna not make it. Actually, he got some really serious fever. So I thought, okay, so everyone who wants to work with us has to kind of try to meet some darkness, at least in the start, confront some darkness. it's a bit peculiar, but...
So that title really wasn't an exaggeration?
No, a lot of the crazy stuff is happening, but I mean, this is during many years, so maybe it's normal, I don't know. But I haven't heard of... Yeah. Not every band I know has a lot of strange things, but some strange things I think everyone has.
So then you Empire of Dark Salvation in 2005, and in 2008, Happiness and Darkness. Now, that album ends on a song called Thriller. I presume this wasn't the Michael Jackson theme, because if you could resurrect Vincent Price to narrate for you, that would be a great feat.
It was actually a cover of the Michael Jackson Thriller. What was funny is that he fucking died very, very shortly after.
So the curse goes on.
And you know that's true, because this was in 2008, and he died in 2009. So no, I won't take credit for that. I'm very, very sorry for him, and I think he was a great artist. He has a lot of respect. He was totally unique, and this is why I wanted to make. If I want to make one cover song, I don't know how it turned out, but at least we tried, and it was just a great homage to Michael Jackson, actually. But we only did this part with Winston Price live because we hoped that no one would figure out this sample live. But I didn't dare, as a lawyer, I didn't dare to do it on the record, of course.
Well, you know, you do have a track about raising the dead on a new album where you start listing off the ingredients of zombie powder from Wade Davis' Surf in the Rainbow, so...
Yeah.
You could have brought him back to life for it. But just going by the concert DVD, I really like two songs from this album, you know, Dusk Till Dawn and Beauty After Midnight. It's not exactly what you'd expect from, like, a Marilyn Manson, because these are very well-structured songs with strong melodic choruses.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think this was the start when I was experimenting more, because we had more, like, irregular beats on the first two albums, and then on the third album I started to play more with borrowing a bit from Metallica here and there and from old, maybe 80s classics, and doing some guitar solos even and some instrumental parts as well, combining with some electronic stuff, and it turned out quite interesting, actually.
2011's Anima Inferna has a few amusingly titled tracks on it, like The Beauty of Fanatic, which makes me think that you really love post-millennial culture, because you're surrounded by religious, political, and corporate super PAC lunatics determined to remold society in their own screw-up image. Then you have 619, which is the San Diego area code and theme song for the diminutive high-flyer wrestler Rey Mysterio. So were you aware of this at all, or is this purely a U.S.-based association? Because when I saw that, I wanted to start chanting Booyaka.
Okay, no, it's not actually 619, it's 616 is okay. The song called, because there were some theories. They looked into some old Pergament rolls, you know, and they were studying the biblical texts, and they found out that the number of the beast was probably supposed to be 616 instead of 666, and that was a horrible discovery, I think, because Iron Maiden would get really mad. So I wrote a song about it called 616. That was a true number of the beast, based on that found, actually.
They were through decades worth of televangelists and death metal bands into disarray.
But you must be a really evil guy, because you took 619, so you turned the 6 upside down.
That's it. <Ring of cross. laughs> Now we come to the crux of the matter, which is your latest album, Utopia. There's a section in Someone Is After Me, which is probably my pick for best song on the album, where you strip it back to bass drum and bass guitar that clearly owes some major depth to Ministry. I believe it was Just One Fix that sounded that way. So was this a deliberate homage or just arise subconsciously?
Probably subconsciously. I mean, you listen to so much music, so something is just stored in your brain, and you just write songs, and sometimes it reminds about the songs and you didn't even think about it. I didn't think about that song at all, actually, when I wrote it, but Ministry is a great band. They were supposed to be, we had this US tour in 2007 in El Paso. We played in El Paso. We played all across the US, actually, and when we came to El Paso, the promoter said, yeah, hey guys, and we were really tired. We were sleeping like 3 hours every night because we were traveling so far. And he said, the venue is here, but your hotel is on the other side of the town because it's right next to where Ministry lives. Isn't that great? And we were, yeah, that's great. So, and then we visited them, but I didn't meet Al then. Just met his sound tech, and they played some stuff for us in the house, in the studio and stuff. And the other guys wanted to sleep. Ministry were waiting for us to have a really hard party after, and this promoter was totally very focused on partying with Ministry, and that was great, but we had like 3 hours to catch our next flight, so I asked the guys, shall we party and sleep? And they said, no, we have to sleep. But then I met actually Al in Oslo last year, because we had this pre-party, and a friend of mine, he played guitar with Ministry. He also played with Celtic Frost, so I had a really nice talk with Al for like 2 hours, because all the metal guys were there. They were just completely insanely drunk, and he just wanted to relax a bit before he got drunk. So I had a really nice talk to him, and I was talking about his newly signed band from the Middle East, and that they were going to get killed if they ever returned, and they were actually opening for Ministry on the tour, and they were great, and had a really nice talk about politics and music, and not so much about Ministry, but what was really cool is that he mentioned our first album, Gothic Electronic Anthems, that was kind of set the standard for that kind of scene, because it was so some kind of a little bit new, and that was really cool.
Another track I really like is Utopia. That one comes much closer to a strong gothic metal sound in both feel and approach. You know, it's very melodic, and the band is playing in a more fluid style. There's lush keyboard accompaniment, vocal harmonies, the whole deal. And along the same lines, there's also a section in Nightmare that I really like. There's a really lush swell of keyboard-based violins that follow a sort of Iron Maiden-esque dual lead on the guitars. The whole sequence runs about a minute from about 3 minutes, 10 seconds in. While the whole song's pretty cool, I wish you'd done more of that part, because it really stands out. You know, it's very emotionally stirring, and you could have built the whole song around that if you wanted.
Yeah, thanks. I think Nightmare is maybe the most important track on the Utopia album, because it explains a lot about this story for the album, because it's a concept album. Just briefly about the story, it's basically self-experience, and basically, of course, I have also added some imagination to it. But when I was a little boy, I lived with my mother in a house, and on Sunday evenings, it was hard to sleep, because the weekend was over, you have to go to school. And on Sunday evenings, I heard this really creepy bell, often in Sunday evenings, a tiny bell sound, and then often a man would come across on the other side of the street, and he had this horrible cough, and it's really creepy to hear somebody have some kind of death cough. But I couldn't see him because there were bushes and trees in the way, so it was really scary because I could never see what he looked like. I just heard his steps and his cough, and then I started to build a story around this.
And speaking about these highly melodic sections, like that part in Nightmare I was talking about, I noticed this about you guys right away, that you weren't exactly sticking to the industrial template. And beyond the stage show and the whole horror motif, that's actually one of the reasons I found you interesting, because you straddle the gothic metal and industrial scenes, and there's a bit of that early Ministry flair in the material, stuff like Every Day is Halloween and Effigy. So you're avoiding most of what I consider to be the pitfalls of the style. For one thing, you clearly employ actual musicians, and the sound of the instruments isn't over-processed. Not like you're like Nine Inch Nails, where everything's worked through a Mac. This is obviously proper studio production with separation, a real drummer working in a non-electronic kit, and so forth. So where did you derive the style from? Was it just the idea of, okay, I want to get a band together, and therefore it just flowed organically, or was it a deliberate stylistic thing you came up with?
No, I think every album is sounding more organic, because I really love that sound, and it was quite logical, because as I said, I started out as a one-man project, then I had to have help from computers because I didn't have a band, and then we formed a band and started to write more songs that we want to play live, and we have a great drummer who also plays in from everything from jazz to black metal, so I wanted also to challenge him with the new songs, and I believe the instrumental parts, they come from my past as a heavy musician. We played thrash metal, heavy metal, and I grew up with heavy metal more than electronic music, basically. So
yeah, I was actually going to touch on that now. You also include a number of atmosphere pieces that only minimally involve the band, if at all, like The New Beginning, March, Hellbeam, and Purgatory. I definitely think they help the overall feel of the album, but is there any reason that they were given their own tracks rather than being tagged onto the songs they lead up to, like they used to do with the old thrash or death metal songs?
Yeah, that's always a question if you want to. I mean, sometimes I believe, I mean, now we have digital files, and if people want to just listen to one track, it's kind of boring if you have to listen to an intro for 3 minutes before the track actually starts. So this is one main reason, but these tracks actually have a big purpose on a live set, because then we have a lot of stuff happening which is very visual, without not including the band, although we do kill a few band members during the show, of course.
And speaking of not adhering too closely to the template of industrial and all that, I find your vocals seem to take influence from several somewhat unexpected sources. You know, the usual suspects do appear, like Ministry, Early Mallard, Manson, Skinny Puppy, but I'm definitely hearing odd sources, like the Scottish gothic industrial obscurity Secession, who gave us the club hit Sneaky Villain Touch, and even By God 20 gave us The Bog, and the only listenable version, as far as I'm concerned, of Like a Prayer Recorded. I particularly appreciated those Secession X ultra-deep baritone vocals that keep appearing on tracks like Someone Is After Me, Utopia, and Nightmare. So, again, was this conscious? Were you aware of this? Or?
No, I actually never, ever heard about those bands before those two you mentioned. But,
wow.
I mean, that's a great compliment. What is cool, though, is that I never, well, I maybe have one, I think on the first album I pitched the vocals on a song called Angel, but all the deep vocals you hear are real. They're not pitched, because if you drink a lot the day before and you get up early, then your voice is very deep. So this is a trick to get the deepest, I mean, those dub really deep voices, and it's cool not to pitch them down. But I wasn't aware of these other bands you mentioned. I have to mention just one funny thing about our new live show. I said that we killed some band members. On the track you mentioned, that's called Hell Demon, the intro of Eternal, we have these two actors coming on stage, like an executioner and a zombie, and they just drag a drummer off his chair.
Yes.
And they throw him into a pit in front of the stage, and then we have this huge animatronic demon made by Scare Factory, actually, who's located not so far from you, I think. They produce a lot of stuff for haunted houses,
right,
and stuff like that. So this demon goes like 7 meters up in the air, and it's holding a drummer by his legs,
right,
and shaking him and going down again, and then everything is silent, and when he climbs back up, his shirt is all bloody, and the people, the crowd would cheer and like cheering and smiling and having fun, and then we start one of the hits. So that's one of them.
Cheering, yeah, and smiling and having fun because the guy just came back from hell.
Yeah.
It says a lot right there. You have a long-standing tradition of including, as you're talking about here, live or promotional videos with your releases, which is a nice bonus. But the one you did for Utopia was very impressive. Beyond the show itself, which was reasonably small-scale and intimate for this sort of an Alice Cooper, Lizzie Borden, Wasp-style spook show, director Daniel William Bones, which I presume is also a pseudonym, gives us a rather long film sequence to bookend the whole thing. And what really surprised me on that was the quality of it, because, you know, I've seen a lot of what passes for modern horror, slasher, and zombie films, and for the most part, they're a pretty sorry lot, particularly by comparison with the heyday of the genre back in the 70s and 80s. But here, with what would effectively be a throwaway sequence just to give a bit of backstory to the concert, you get a well-filmed, atmospheric, and well-paced piece that pretty much blows away all of today's crop. I'm really impressed by this. Where did you get this idea from?
That's very nice. Thank you so much. I'm glad we spent a lot of money and a lot of time on this, and me and Daniel, we've been working hard on developing ideas. I mean, I wanted to do something else with this release, not only a CD release, but also trying to make some kind of, I mean, it's not a proper film like a movie, but it's some kind of hybrid between like a short film and a concert,
yeah,
film, and integrated the concert part. But we had a lot of help from some really clever people in the film industry in Norway. Makeup artists, they did some zombies on a film called Dead Snow. I don't know if you're familiar,
oh, yes,
with that one.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Norwegian zombie movie. And we had some people from Max Manus, which is a war movie from Norway, which is also quite professional. So we were really lucky. We had a crew of like 40 people, and they were just wanting to give us the best we could for that amount of money and that amount of time. So we have, actually, on the concert film, we have 18 different camera angles because we recorded 2 days. So that's quite a lot to choose from. So it never actually gets boring.
And in terms of the film itself, I was impressed that there wasn't a lot of quick cutting, flashing lights, and obvious CG involved. I'm talking about the wraparound. Were you inspired at all by the video game industry? Because the overall feel of it seemed to say something like Silent Hill to me.
Okay, yeah. No, we didn't use a lot of animation because, to be honest, I'm quite fed up with animation. And this is the,
yeah,
same. Like, our live show is now filled with real props. We don't use, like, a lot of video effects. We just use real three-dimensional props so people can go and touch them, you know, because it's very heavy to travel around with it. And it has its limitations, but it's cool to just try to make something that is real, not with all this animation. It almost never gets real enough, I think. A lot of it is good, but it is a bit awkward that if you watch Jurassic Park today, it still looks quite good. So I don't think they have had a great development since that movie, actually. But it depends how you use animation. I mean, if the main elements are real and then you just top it up with some animation, then it can work. But all these characters who are totally like 100% animated, I really hate that.
Yeah, and I have to say that I really got a kick out of the press kit where you wrote out this entire backstory on yourself, or at least yourself as a character in the story, as being a lawyer by day and this monster gothic industrial vocalist by night, and nightmares about being taken by and performing for zombies. I mean, I'm giving a really brief synopsis here, but you go on for a few pages worth of detail and explanation. It's kind of unheard of to put that much thought into a press release.
Yeah, thanks. I wanted to do that because we worked a lot with it, and there are a lot of thoughts behind it. I'm a perfectionist by heart, and I just want everything to be thought through really properly. I don't want to release anything just, yeah, we wanted to make an album about getting drunk or whatever. I mean, we want to have something to say.
Right.
Of course, you're saying something if you want to have an album about getting drunk, and that's fine, but it's not the kind of my style. It's more like
tankard.
I wanted to show, yeah, tankard, no doubt about it.
But you said you wanted to show
without this alcohol, yeah. And it's true, and it's true. I won't disrespect them for that, but this is just something completely different. And yeah, I think a lot of journalists appreciated that press kit because then they can kind of read a bit about the idea behind it.
And obviously, you've already answered part of this, but it was noted in there that you're a lawyer by day, and I was wondering, is there any truth to this one? Because I got a good laugh trying to picture your partners at the firm when they find out what you've been doing on your off hours.
it's completely true. I have my own law firm, and I'm also an employed lawyer in the Norwegian Film and TV Union. So
does anybody say anything about your nocturnal career, or is it just kind of, since you're in the music industry?
Well, I think they think it's kind of fun. I mean, the most far-out thing once was my mother, actually, because I worked a bit together with her. She's also a lawyer, so in the early years, I worked with her, and she was putting in this ad in the phone catalog, you know, in the old days, and we are dealing with some estates when people die, you know, and then she put in an ad with a picture of Gottminster with a knife, and she said, "We can handle your estate," and I said, "Are you crazy?"
Wow.
No, but that picture is so nice because it's really, she's into this gothic thing and it looks really, you know, gothic and really aesthetic. But I'm fucking standing there with white coarse paint and a top hat and a knife, and we will handle your estate.
Wow.
So that's probably the most far out combination I ever saw with the lawyer and the...
But she actually published this, so you actually used this as an ad for a while.
Yeah, the picture was in the ad.
I can only picture some grieving family seeing this guy.
It's horrible. I don't know what she was thinking, but that was even too harsh for my taste.
So, do you have anything you want to promote? Any upcoming tours for the States or festival tours in Europe?
Well, about the States, we're hoping to come back. As I said, we had the full tour in 2007 and we played some festivals, but now we just started to promote the album in the States, and I definitely hope to be back. We were invited for some festivals in Philadelphia, actually, which is not too far from you, I think, but it didn't fit with our schedule because it crashed with some shows in Europe because we're constantly touring in Europe. So, next on the program is the Mira Luna Festival, where we're playing together with Nightwish and bands like that. It's quite a big festival, 25,000 people. Then we're going to head off to Belgium, do some headliner show. Then we're going to back to Norway to do our own headliner show at the Rockefeller Music Hall, where we record the whole thing. We're going to show the film, like an intro film, on screen. Then when the band goes on stage, we're going to perform the whole live concert from the film and then back to the screen again with the outro movie. That's going to be really awesome, I think. And then we're going back to the Netherlands to play at the Eindhoven Metal Meeting together with Arcturus, Therion, and the all-time favorite Coroner. And it's so cool because I really was a big fan of Coroner, and now we're finally going to play together on the same day. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Right, and you mentioned that one of your guitarists had worked with Celtic Frost, so there's that connection as well.
Yeah, not our guitarist, but a friend of mine who was... I've been on tour with him with his other band. They supported us on a previous European tour, and he played with Celtic Frost and Ministry and Satyricon, if you know.
Right.
Band. But the US, I really hope that we'll come back soon, because it depends how it goes with the album in US. It has been quite good in Germany. We had the top 100 sales charts, and the single was on number 4 on the alternative charts. That's very good. But let's see how the promotion goes in the US. I mean, I don't think our previous album was promoted so much in the US. It's been a while, so I'm very curious to see what's going on. And I hope to come back. I really hope, because we really love to do the US. I mean, you guys are crazy.
Well, thank you.
That's really good.
Would you point the listeners to your website or Facebook page?
Yeah, we have our two main sites. It's Gottminster.com, and the Facebook is facebook.com/officialgottminster. That's where most things is happening on the Facebook site. I mean, we have so many updates now. We have at least one update per day, I think. So if you just go in and like, just press like on facebook.com/officialgottminister, then you will get yourself updated all the time.
Well, with that, Bjorn, I'd like to thank the Goth Minister for joining us here tonight on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back to talk your next magnum opus and Missive of Inner Torment.
Thank you so much. It's been really nice. Thank you so much, man.
And to close out our interview with the Goth Minister, here's another taste of Utopia. This is the title track, only here on Third Eye Cinema.
Time will turn our prophecy. This is Sam Rosenthal of Black Tip Flute. You're not recording this, are you? Okay. This is Sam Rosenthal of Black Tape for a Blue Girl, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Adam from Tribulation, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Udo Dogsnyder, the singer of UDO, and you're listening to the show Third Eye Cinema.
Okay. Here are you, Dada.
Hi, this is Mirai from Psy, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Dr. McCannibal from Psy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you quivered in fear during our interview with the Goth Minister. Next time on Week 56 of Third Eye Cinema, the Vladimirs return with their moody Gothic Western project, Sonomorphic. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician and like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio.
Cinema, and you should continue to listen to this until your ears bleed.
Me too? Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm horrible at these things. Hey, I'm...
Yeah, this ain't gonna work.
Hey, guys! I'll try it serious this time. Alright. Hi, I'm crying. No, I'm sorry, I can't do it.
If you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for the links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. See you next week.